I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel, with us from Cleveland. Fernando Villa is the director of programming for Fusion. That's a joint venture between ABC and Univision. He's with us from Miami. Sports writer and professor of journalism Kevin Blackstone is here in D.C. And also here in Washington this week, Mario Loyola. He's normally with us from Austin, where he's with the National Review Magazine and the Texas Public Policy Foundation, but he's in D.C. this week, and he stopped by. Jimmy, take it away.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas.
What's happening?
Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey.
What's up, Jimmy? How are you?
Hey, let's get caffeinated. What's good? All right. You know what? Let's get things started. I know it's been a long week full of Monday morning quarterbacking on the George Zimmerman trial. The only thing I want to say about the verdict, it wasn't necessarily surprising. And interestingly, I had a throwback memory to something Super Mario said to me early in the game when we first started talking about the Trayvon Martin case. Michelle, we got a clip. Yep.
We do. Here it is. This is from March of 2012 when you asked Mario what role he thought race played in the shooting, and this is what Mario had to say.
A lot of Americans are terrified of a black dude in a hoodie. I mean, that's like a symbol of personal insecurity. And, you know, if I saw you, Jimmy, walking down the street in Northeast D.C. wearing a hoodie, I would cross the street. I mean, you can say that's racism, but it's also self-preservation.
Attorney Mario Loyola. Listen, man, you know, I feel like it's my responsibility to parents and young black teenagers all over the Texas area to ask, are you a registered gun owner?
That's very funny.
I wish I was kidding.
No, look, I mean the fact that we have a young, innocent man who's dead here is due to, in part, to what I think is a pretty obvious poor judgment, stupidity of Zimmerman, among other things. But that's only the last step in the chain of events that led to Trayvon Martin's death. I mean, from the very beginning, people have always been focused on the racial aspect of this. Mm. But I think that it's more about, like, general paranoia, really, than about race, because, you know, to the extent that Zimmerman was profiling Trayvon, there were other things than the fact that he was black. It was how he was dressed. It's the fact that he's a male, that he's young, that he's walking by himself. I mean, the general aspect of somebody who's looking at like that, walking around at night, is going to draw suspicion whether they're white or black, right? Now, if we're going to have a national conversation about race, and we're going to make this about race, which I don't think it should be, but if we're going to make this about race and we're going to make this about the negative racial stereotypes that a lot of people have and continue to have and have had for a long time, let's take a sober look at the statistics. You know, in New York City, for example, white males are responsible for like 5% of the robberies. A much smaller population of black males are responsible for 70% of the robberies. With such dramatic statistical disparities, how on earth can you expect there not to be negative racial stereotypes?
Okay. Fernando Villa.
Well, I mean, the notion of paranoia is a good one, and Mario's statistics actually sort of feed into that, into this culture of paranoia. I mean, the vast majority of black people are not committing crimes. You know, it's
really?
Like to say, I don't know, the vast majority of hosts on NPR are white males. That doesn't mean that every time I encounter a white male on the street, I assume he's a host of NPR. You know, that it's just,
well,
it's a backwards way of looking at it.
More to the point, do you see, isn't the vast majority of financial crimes on Wall Street committed by white males? But I don't see white males on Wall Street being profiled to keep them from working on Wall Street because of the propensity of white males on Wall Street to commit financial crimes. I mean, that would be...
Exactly. It's a backwards way of thinking.
Also,
not for nothing. I mean, I've lived around college campuses, including Case Western Reserve University and John Carroll University here in Cleveland. And I got to tell you, any given night, on any given day, you can cruise around and you'll find young white males in hooded jackets, hoods up, headphones on, faces obscured. And interestingly enough, they're not being shot.
Well,
Kevin Blackstone.
Can we just deal with what Mario said? Because the fact is he said it, and a lot of people believe it, and a lot of people think that that's an important data point. So why don't we just deal with what he said.
Well, Jimmy, you and I live the syllogistic argument that Mario mentioned and Fernando brought up. You can't find a black man in America, or it's hard to find a black man in America who has not had a very negative encounter with police, or in this case, someone acting like a police officer. My mother just recounted an incident that happened to me some 25 years ago up in New Jersey, when I had a gun at the back of my head from a cop looking for a robber who looked like me. And that's
or at least he said did.
They all look like you, bro.
Right.
That's
the reality here. I mean, all of this kind of reminds me of this old movie that Paul Winfield did back in the early 80s called White Dog. I don't know if any of you all remember that, but this white German shepherd had to be deprogrammed because he had been programmed to attack black people anytime he saw them. And that's kind of like what this is. You know, it's not a brother I've spoken to since the Zimmerman thing went down who didn't understand what was going on there and doesn't have a very visceral reaction to this story. But, and it is about race. You cannot get away from race.
So why don't we just say we are having this national conversation. I don't know why people say we need to have one, because we are having one.
Well,
so now
exactly.
that we're having it, what should happen now? What should we do?
I think that the other important aspect is this notion of vigilantism. I mean, if George Zimmerman had done what Mario does every time he sees a black person on the street, you know, Trayvon would be alive, right? Instead, he decided to take it into his own hands and go after him with a gun, no less. I mean, that's the real troubling thing, where, you know, there is a culture of paranoia. The initiation is what gets people really.
Go ahead, Mario.
And by the way, it's not just black dudes in hoodies. It's also my fellow Puerto Ricans in hoodies, right? And I think that, you know, it's also just a certain aspect of a person walking down the street. Like, for me, if the dude is alone, that right there actually is an overriding factor, where you're like, let me cross the street just out of safety concerns.
Yeah,
and
but
people definitely
cross
the street when they see me.
But the safety concern, and you mentioned self-preservation, you don't have to worry about self-preservation. I have to worry about self-preservation.
Why don't I have to worry about self-preservation?
Well, because black males, particularly between the ages of 17 and 34, we usually talk about that as a demographic that is important in finance and economics and commercialism, but that demographic dies by handgun violence more than anybody else. That is the number one killer of black males. And that they're the ones who have to be concerned about self-preservation anytime they encounter a police officer, or in this case, as I said before, someone pretending to be a police officer.
Can I tell a quick story? When early on in my radio days, when I was DJing at WCSB in Cleveland, that's Cleveland State, yay! I was coming out late night from doing the radio show, and I was running for a bus that I saw passing, and I swear to you, on my children's eyes, two cruisers came out of nowhere and swooped on me and demanded that I stop because I was hauling behind up the street to try to catch this bus, and they quizzed me. They called the PD of the station to make sure that my credentials were in check, and they let me go. But they held me in the back of a car for 45 minutes to make sure that I wasn't a black man running from the scene of a crime.
Well, but again, I understand that. But, and again, it's offensive because people acting under the color of law with a badge under the courts are acting allegedly in behalf of all of us. When a state prosecutes a case, they say the people versus X. What about what Mario said? If the fact is the overwhelming majority of the violent crimes that are affecting young black men are usually committed by young black men, the violence is between and among young Latino men, each other, young black men, each other. I mean, so what's the conversation we need to have about that? Or is that just not the conversation for today?
I don't know. That argument seems kind of weird. I mean, young white kids in black trench coats don't make me shake.
Okay, but I mean, when I feel as, you know, my father's Puerto Rican and my mother's Cuban, as a Puerto Rican, Puerto Rican guys have an image problem. People perceive them as having a high propensity to criminal behavior, for example, compared to other ethnic groups. That makes me most of all upset at the Puerto Ricans who are committing crimes, and I don't understand why people don't have that reaction in the black community.
Well, because first of all, Puerto Ricans can be black too. I mean, the people that I grew up with were of any race.
You know, it's right. It's the community.
But what about his? But what about Jimmy's point, which is he's saying white guys in trench coats don't make him shake. I mean, why is it that
white guys who have committed
the overwhelming majority of mass violence in this country aren't profiled every time they go to the movie?
That's the point, because people of color are the only people who are profiled. We never talk about anyone else suffering from profiling, racial profiling. In fact, racial profiling can be a real issue. When we had the sniper incident here in D.C., it didn't fit. The profile wasn't that it would be someone black. So they weren't looking for Malvo and Muhammad. They were looking for a white guy. And in that time, more people died.
But that's a tautology, right? Because I think there's a clear error in what Kevin just said. And here it is. If Trayvon had been a white guy in a hoodie, walking around by himself at night in that neighborhood, he would have been followed by Zimmerman anyway.
And we would never have been followed.
Where's the evidence?
Because it's a suspicious-looking character.
Where's his evidence?
I think that you guys are really wrong to make this so much about race.
But if you read the transcript, Zimmerman twice said he was black, and then he made the comment, the expletive comment about they always get away with it. Well, who is they? He's not talking about a white guy in a hoodie.
Let me ask you this, Kevin. You know, here's what's interesting to me about this conversation. Again, I go back to this argument, national conversation about race. We are having it. In fact, the country is having it. The country is having it. When you have opportunities
for
people to talk. Yeah, but the conversation changes. And there is evidence that the conversations do change public opinion. Blacks and whites tend to have very different opinions about the way criminal justice works. But there's also evidence that that incidents, anecdotes, change behavior because people reframe it for people in a way that they can then see. So the question now becomes, what do we do now?
So that we don't have
the same conversation next year.
Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to change the stand your ground rule in Florida.
Yeah.
That's the first thing, because that gave license for something like this to happen, and someone got away with it. To me, that's the first thing.
Anybody else, Mario?
Yeah, I'd like to just send
a message.
I'd like to send a message out to my fellow Puerto Ricans, and here it is. If you think you have an image problem, and you think that your behavior as a community has nothing to do with it, I think you're going to continue to have an image problem.
All righty then.
Okay. Okay. Fernando, you have any thoughts? What do you want to do?
Well,
what's next?
I mean, I think that, you know, I think that the one of the biggest issues is sort of how punitive the criminal and how different the punitive nature of the criminal justice system is depending on race. I mean, that to me is the big conversation to have as well. You know, whether it's drug crimes or violent crimes, you know, white people tend to get off a lot more, and that's backed up by the statistics as well. And I think that's the easiest, or not the easiest, but the most sort of obvious policy change that can happen.
And Jimmy, you have a final thought on this before we move on?
God save anybody that pulls a weapon on my son or me. God save you. That's it. Because just forget about it.
That's a lot of change.
Shoot to kill. Shoot to kill, bro. Well, because if you don't, it's on like Donkey Kong.
Well, I'd rather
be judged by 6 than carried by 12.
Yeah. Well, that's what George Zimmerman thought, right?
Yeah. That's what he did.
Isn't that what he thought? I just look. I think that if at the very least, I think this has given people an opportunity to talk about how much this pains them and affects them and hurts them. I mean, we've seen lots of commentaries and lots of people talking about this. And at the very least, it's given people a chance to talk to each other, maybe people they don't otherwise talk to, about these issues and get it out there and say, this is how it is for me. This is my life. This is how I feel. We just have a couple minutes left in our weekly barbershop roundtable. We're talking with culture critic Jimmy Israel, sports writer Kevin Blackiston, policy analyst Mario Loyola, and journalist Fernando Vila. We were going to talk about the McDonald's budgeting issue, but I think we're going to skip that. I think we'll talk about that next week, because we're going to talk about the issues around part-time workers and the growing prevalence of part-time work. So we'll talk about that next week in some conversation. But before we go, we do want to talk about Jay-Z's album, Magna Carta Holy Grail. Right. There's a new criticism now. People might remember that the singer and civil rights activist Harry Belafonte once said that Jay-Z and Beyonce need to take more social responsibility. Well, Jay-Z's talking back on this album. I just want to play a short clip. I'm just trying to find common ground, but Mr. Belafonte come and chop down. Mr. Dayo, Major Fayo, respect these youngins, boy, it's my time now. Oh, I had missed that lyric until you all pointed it out to me. Ouch, Kevin, what do you say? Is he overstepping? Is he giving his props to the elders? What's up?
I mean, come on. You can't go after Harold Belafonte, even though he went after you. Look, you are doing your thing, but we also know you don't have the history and the narrative of Harold Belafonte. You know, you didn't learn at the knee of Paul Robeson. You know, you didn't write the check to get MLK out of the Birmingham jail. I mean, you didn't do all of those sorts of things. You didn't march on South Africa. You know, you did Big Pimpin', which a lot of people would say is a misogynistic album, okay? I mean, it may be funky, but at the end, but you know, you can look at the lyrics for yourself. And you know, and most recently with the whole Barclays Center up in Brooklyn, there's a whole documentary out called Battle of Brooklyn, which shows how Jay-Z and Beyonce were kind of used as pawns to help the developers just steamroll over people in the Atlantic Yards neighborhood so that they could build that sparkling new arena there. So, you know, lay off of Harry
Belafonte. So sit down, son, huh? What do you have to say about Mario? Do you care?
Well, I mean, having grown up in a Cuban family, I've got to say that Harry Belafonte has a big image problem in the Cuban community, which is that he thinks Fidel Castro is great. And that's all we know about him. I mean, we don't know any of the history that Kevin was just referring to. But, I mean, when you know that someone thinks Fidel Castro is great, and you know you're from a Cuban family, it makes it very hard to take them seriously when they moralize over other people.
Oh, okay. Fernando, you got a bite of that?
Briefly. I mean, I think I'm the youngest guy here, and I mean I could see why Jay-Z would be annoyed that an older guy is kind of scolding him, but his comeback was just like the lamest thing I've ever seen.
Okay.
If you're gonna come after Harry Belafonte, you better
come a little bit harder than that, right? Okay. Yeah. Jimmy, you're the culture guy. Final thought.
Yeah, there's no good argument against, you know, an 80-odd-year-old man. You know, just nod your head. Just do what I do. Just nod your head a lot and do what you ultimately want to do. That's really the true sign of intelligence. Don't try to get at a 70-year-old man that falls asleep while he's being interviewed, bro. It makes you look bad. So just let that just brush it off your shoulder and count your money. That's what you really do.
So now when I'm 80, Jimmy, when you nod at me, I'm gonna know what it means. All right.
Okay, bro.
You're still going to cross the street?
Yeah.
When he's 80 in your chair?
Well, I won't be
chair?
Able to then.
Okay. Jimmy Israel's a writer and culture critic. He's an adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College. He was with us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. From our member station in Miami, WLRN, Fernando Villar. He's director of programming for Fusion, an ABC Univision venture. Kevin Blackstone is a sports columnist and professor of journalism at the University of Maryland here in D.C., along with Mario Loyola, director of the Center for 10th Amendment Studies, actually general counsel now. Do I have that right? At the Texas Public Policy Foundation, columnist for the National Review. Caught up with him in D.C. this week. Thank you all so much.
Ciao, ciao.
Later, guys.
All right.
Yep, yep.
And remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for our Barbershop podcast that's in the iTunes store or at npr.org. That's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.